Captain Joe. I'm not up in the captain's chair on the magical Isle of Vashon. I am broadcasting to you live, unscripted and unrehearsed, from a captain's chair in the Kingdom of Sweden and from the capital thereof, Stockholm. And I am here with my friend of family rank and his lovely family, Dr. and Professor Mark Reinhardt, and he is going to join me on this broadcast. It is a lovely, lovely night, and it is 21:30 on the evening, on Tuesday evening here in Stockholm, and I am staying in a hotel called the Rival Hotel. Now, one might well ask why I am staying in a hotel when Professor Reinhardt and his lovely family have a place in which to live. They do not live in a tent out in a park here in Stockholm. Where they live is in a flat or apartment that they own. And when I come here, I ask to be installed in suitable quarters because their flat is not all that large. And so I am in the Rival Hotel. It is a wonderful hotel here in an older section of Stockholm, and I highly recommend it. And if for no other reason, that one of the accessories in the Rival Hotel is a bear. There is a bear in this room with me in room 609. So greetings to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world. And this time we're going to deliver greetings in person to all of my Stockholm family and also to Singapore, because I know that my son, who is no longer living there, has still left a piece of himself in Stockholm. And he last week was with me for a few days. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the program. And I now take us quickly and reluctantly to the binnacle list. And I do that because my friend and colleague and aviation advisor, Captain Truman O'Brien, is having some real challenges with his back and with other parts of himself. And so for all of Captain Joe's people who are on the binnacle list, you remain, as always, in the palm of my hand, and it is my wish and my hope and my command that you carry out all of the instructions that are given to you by your medical practitioner, and that so that you will leave the binnacle list in the way which is approved by your captain up in the chair and not by any other way. So we're going to begin the broadcast. I'm looking out from the window of the Rival Hotel and looking out over a lovely courtyard, all sorts of activities going on all around us here in the Rival. If you ever come to Stockholm, and may it be that you are able to do this sometime in your lifetime, it is a wonderful and lovely European city in the classical and traditional European sense, that you also stay in the Rival Hotel, and you too may get a bear. So I'm going to hand the antiphone over to Professor Reinhardt. We learned that we have to hand the telephone back and forth, and although Truman gave me some advice on how to do it without handing it back and forth, we've discovered that I have not been able to follow his advice exactly, and so we're going to do the hand the antiphone back and forth. And so I'm going to start off the broadcast by asking Professor Reinhardt how it was that we first met. And in particular, I'm going to ask him to tell from his side the the first expenditure that I ever made on his behalf. So, good doctor, here it is. Over to you.
Thank you, Joseph. It's a pleasure to be on your show. It's an honor, I should say, too. And it's especially wonderful to have you in the city of Stockholm after all these years, and especially under COVID, which affected everybody's opportunities to get around and to travel, and to see you finally here is beyond some words can express. So it's lovely that you're here. About our original encounter, that happened in relation to the University of Cambridge, and that happened in terms of my acceptance into the master's program there in 1997, I believe it was. And with the acceptance into the program, the University of Cambridge sent all sorts of paper to our house in the United States, all the things that had to be done before arrival, all the courses that had to be registered, the accommodations that had to be secured. And there was a third thing there that they asked for, and there is a particular British name for what we in the United States would call a security deposit, and that was the security deposit that had to go with your accommodations. And I believe it was in the amount of £67. Captain Joe is vigorously putting his thumb in the air, saying it's a much higher amount, son, probably around £90 then, I will say. And he says that's the right amount, bullseye. I had no idea how to get a institution in a foreign country currency in Great British pounds. So I didn't know what to do. But luckily, my father, who is a Coast Guard veteran as well, mentioned that one of his old colleagues was in Cambridge working with the Scott Polar Research Institute and might be able to give me some advice on this. So I emailed someone named Captain Joseph Wubold one day. Those days, the internet was still getting started, wasn't it? Email was a fairly new thing. But I still managed to get to the computer room where I was and to send Joseph an email. And I introduced myself, told him who I was and what I was doing. And that was the moment that I think our friendship was born. And he started giving me all sorts of terrific advice and stories about how wonderful Cambridge was. And he even agreed to dip into his own pockets to pay for the security deposit of £90, or quid, as the British say. And he walked over to my college in Cambridge, which was Queen's College, and he visited the lovely bursar there, who gladly took the money from Captain Joe and on my behalf. So our meeting, Captain Joe, all revolves around securing my room at the college. It wasn't the most lovely of rooms, I'm afraid to say. It was Cambridge is known for some beautiful, beautiful accommodations, beautiful buildings, medieval-style architecture, cobblestone streets. Unfortunately, my accommodation was in the middle of nowhere, behind a long, almost never-ending street through a small set of woods into a 1955-style building with cinder block, and not particularly attractive. But nevertheless, that's where I stayed until I could move up into better accommodations later. But all of that was thanks to Captain Joe's £90, as he insists. I think it was more around £67, but we'll say 91 since it's your broadcast. And that was the start of a friendship which has lasted to this very day and has been a wonderful and important one for me. So back to you, Captain Joe.
What Professor Reinhardt did not tell you was that, and I'm going to tell you, was that after I had deposited the well over £90 with the accommodation tutor, so that's the title, in an 800-year-old university, the accommodation tutor, and he said after I had gotten the receipt, intent that I would be reimbursed for this, and in fact, that's what happened. But she said, while you're here, why don't you just look around at all of the possibilities? Now, Queen's is one of the older university colleges, and many of the structures are genuine Tudor. They were built during the Tudor period, and they remain in use today. So I accepted the invitation, and because I am a historical person, I love Queen's immediately, and I was really struck with how well the college was being cared for, and that I was certain that Mark would be happy in Queen's, and I was most certain of that because he was going to be quartered in one of these rooms, which was at least 400 years old. And I reported to him that that was what was going to happen. So when Mark got to Cambridge and he appeared at 21 Foster Road, which was the address where Mary R. and I lived,
And he was riding this really crappy bicycle that he had bought from a police auction. And I could hear him driving, riding up on his bicycle on the gravel that was the car park for that house. And he came into the house, and he and Mary R. Became immediate and fast friends. I was a little bit more skeptical, and I remain skeptical today after all of these years. But those are the stories for other times. And so when he said, Captain, I thought that I was going to be living in one of the older sections in the main quadrangle of Queens. And I said, yes, that was what I thought was going to happen. And he said, well, let's go together to the place that I've been assigned. And Mark has already described this building that he had, to which he had been assigned. It had been a nurses' quarters for training of nurses during World War II. It was the only place in Cambridge that was attacked by the Germans, I believe, in a town. Unlike Canterbury, Cambridge was hardly touched by the Germans during the Blitz. But it was really a bad, bad building. It was made out of cinder blocks, and it was one layer on top of the other. So we went up to his room, which was essentially no bigger than a shipboard gear locker. And I was looking around, and I noticed that there was a common galley for all of you sailor types. You all know. But for those of you who are not sailor types, the galley is the kitchen, and there was a common kitchen on that floor. And so I felt it my responsibility to inspect that galley, and in particular, I looked at the uptakes over the galley range, and they'd not been cleaned since the days of Henry VIII, and there was a fire waiting to happen, and not knowing how fire-prone Mark was at that time. I didn't know what his background was, whether he came from a family where they cleaned the galley uptake. But I was really concerned that the place was going to set on fire. And I said, well, we need to get you out of here just as soon as we can. And I suggest that you get on the list for quarters in the main part of the college. Because a lot of university students in Cambridge drop out halfway through the first term, Michaelmas term it's called. And so that's what he did. And he eventually ended up in the lovely part of Queens. And he remains today a member of Queens. Are you a fellow of Queens, by the way?
Not a
fellow. You are not a fellow of Queens. Well, my college is Darwin, which is right across Silver Street from Queens. A much newer one, a nouveau riche, as we say. So that was the story about how we got started together, and so now I have to tell a story about his academic prowess. One of the things that happened, and then I'm going to hand this over to him for his side of it, because there are two sides to every story. And mine is somewhat more pejorative than his. But he would, the night before, he had to submit a paper. And in Cambridge, writing is a big part of the academic experience. And so invariably, it was always the night before he had to submit a paper. I would hear the sound of his bicycle on the gravel in front of the house. And then the next thing that would happen would be the slap of the mail chute. And down through the mail chute would come a brown paper envelope. And inside that brown paper envelope was a paper that he wanted me to read and comment on before he submitted it. And of course, he was doing this the night before he had to submit. And so in one of those papers, an expression that he used is one which we continue to use to this day. It means absolutely nothing. And it was part of his believing that in order to be part of the Cambridge experience, you had to talk like this and you had to write like this. And so he wrote the term, tell me what that term is.
Polemic duality.
Polemic duality, yes. Now, I'm not even going to try to tell you what that means, but Mark is going to tell you anyway. So as he worked his way through his academic career at Cambridge, we worked together on his use of the English language. And now I'm going to pass this over to Mark for his version.
Well, that's actually, for once, not far from the truth. I mean, I think one of the things that Captain Joe offered upon my arrival in Cambridge was a second set of eyes on the things I was writing, and that was a very generous offer. But it didn't come with, it did come with some strings attached, and that was he took his job very seriously. So I would get my papers back with so much red markings on that paper that it looked like some sort of bloodbath had taken place, and I would then have to sulk back to my accommodations, probably still in the ones you mentioned. By this time, I was early in the writing phase and have to make all these corrections. And it's true, I did use some terms that I perhaps shouldn't have used, but that joke has survived, and that admonition has survived all these years, even up until this morning when I was writing an email on my current work as a professor at Stockholm University, and I looked at the email I just written, and I realized that about 25% of the words could probably be deleted, and the email would make much more sense and would be much clearer. So I think that story it causes all sorts of laughter between us in terms of really how awful that word was. Not only did it come with the kind of loving advice that Captain Joe is known for, but it also had a very important lesson in how we express ourselves and how we communicate, and especially how the responsibilities that all of us have, especially also academics, to write in clear ways as possible. And I took that advice up until this day. And this very morning, when I was fixing some of the writings that I was doing, and I tried to make them much clearer, and I took out as many polemic dualities as I could of that email. But there's an interesting story. That paper about polemic dualities made its way into my final master's thesis, and I think I got some sort of honors assessment there. And the writing at the bottom of the thesis said, the grading committee finds that your use of polemic dualities is outstanding, innovative, and well worth using in this particular text. So the joke was on Captain Joe at that point. Of course, I'm joking. They didn't mention anything about that. They just probably circled it and had nothing to say. In any case, I took the lesson, and I took it into my life and into my career, and it continues. The joke continues to this day, but so does the lesson.
So one of the great things about any friendship which survives through all sorts of things, great and small, good and bad, is just the kind of thing that you have heard an example of. I somehow doubt the story that the thesis review committee found that to be acceptable language, but in any case, we're going to let it stand, and I'm going to talk about a couple of things that are part of my regular program, but I'm not going to leave Professor Reinhardt because despite all of the shortcomings that he had as he worked his way all the way through his doctorate, a Cambridge doctorate, and he did part of the work for that doctorate also at that other place. The other place, of course, if you are a Canterburyan, which he and I both are, the other place is Oxford. And they refer to Cambridge. Over in Oxford, they refer to Cambridge as also that other place. So he did part of his doctoral work at Oxford. He did some of that at Brussels. And now what I'm going to say about Mark is the absolute truth. It is the truth as your captain sees it, and he may not agree with this, but that's just too bad. To me, as his career developed, as he became more and more experienced, especially in the world of the European Union, and as he became more and more experienced in the whole business of life in Europe, he became an expert in his field, and I believe that there is no one, certainly no American, that knows more about the European Union and how it works. And he has written about it extensively. I cannot say that any of the things about which he has written or any of the books to which he has contributed have become exactly bestsellers, but each one of them holds an honored place in my bookcase in Captain's Quarters, And I further can't admit that frequently I bring one out to refresh my feelings about the viability of the European Union. But the fact that that he has written these things, that they have been accepted by his own, I hate to use the word peers, but I can't come up with a better one. And for me to watch as he has worked his way through the Swedish the Swedish education system, the American education system. His undergraduate degree comes, by the way, from the University of Oregon down in Eugene. All of you Duck fans out there, of Captain Joe's people, there are a number of them of you out there, and in not a teasing way, I just have the highest regard for everything he has done, everything he has written, and my conviction is firm that he probably knows more about that particular part of our world than anybody else, and certainly any other Americans. So a couple of things in our regular features. The first one is, all of you who are Captain Joe's people know that the connection between the magical Isle of Vashon and the city of Seattle used to go through the West Seattle Bridge, and that the West Seattle Bridge started to develop cracks and that they had to shut it down. What you all, most of you, do not know is that the original West Seattle Bridge was approved by your Captain Joe. When I was the chief of operations in the 13th Coast Guard District, which had its headquarters in Seattle, and it remains so today, I was in charge of approving any bridges that crossed over navigable waters of the United States, and the West Seattle Bridge is one of those. It goes across a waterway called the High Belows Waterway. And my part was not to approve the construction of it or the design, the engineering design of it, but to make sure that it was high enough so that any vessels, any possible vessels that would go into the High Belows Waterway would be able to pass safely and with enough clearance, even at the highest tide level, under the West Seattle Bridge. So I was really concerned when they had to shut it down. It has been shut down now for 2 years. They decided that they could repair it rather than to replace it, which was the right decision. And now it's going to open, and the schedule is that it is going to open on the 12th of September. It remains to be seen whether or not that is really going to happen. But the 12th of September is when we look to reopen the West Seattle Bridge. We no longer have to make a detour by way of Eugene, which happens to be the where Puddles the Duck, who is the mascot of the Oregon Ducks, happens to come from originally. Another new construction work, all of you of Captain Joe's people will recall that I was the commander up in the Great Lakes, a good part of Lake Superior, Lake Michigan, and Lake Huron, with my headquarters in the Sioux. And in fact, my office was just not very far south of the Sioux locks. And the Corps of Engineers is building a new lock chamber, another one of the, to accommodate the 1,200 or the 1,000 footer. The lock is going to be 110 feet wide, which means that there'll be 2.5 feet on either side, because most of the 1,000-foot vessels are 105 feet wide. And it's going to be 1,200 feet long, and it's going to be built on the site of the old Davis and Sabin locks. So I will be commenting more on that, because I'll be following that with a great deal of interest. The Federal Transit Administration has made a large donation to the Washington State Ferry System. We talked about that briefly. The ferry system has just sent me a signal which tells me that they are looking to electrify
a large part of the fleet. And I doubt that any of the $38 million is going to be used for that. And frankly, I don't know where they're going to use that money. I am convicted of the thought that it probably is not going to be used all that well. But anyway, they have floated a plan. There's a little bit of a Stockholm pun for you for tonight. They have floated a plan which includes the retrofit of some of the ferries to hybrid electric boats, some new construction that will also be hybrid electric, and you can bet I'm going to be watching all of that with great care. I'm handing the Andy phone back to Professor Reinhardt, who has earned the title. He is a tenured and full professor at the University of Stockholm. He is a dual citizen, both U.S. citizenship and Swedish citizenship. I'm going to hand this back to him for a short but pithy good night, and then I am going to give my regular closing remarks.
I'd simply use these final words to encourage Captain Joe's listeners, that especially those in the Seattle area, to come visit Stockholm. There's a tremendous amount of similarities between the two cities, wouldn't you say, Captain Joe, in terms of the nautical history. Stockholm goes back to beyond the medieval days, to the Viking days, in fact, so a slightly older city, but a beautiful one set on about 15 islands comprise the city, with bridges everywhere and boats everywhere and ships everywhere. And, of course, if you are Captain Joe's people, you will probably appreciate all of that, the nautical parts, the ship parts, and you're all more than welcome to make contact, and we would certainly welcome you here in the city. So back to Joseph.
So we have to say good night, and we say good night in particular to that lovely lady, Olivia Newton-John, and one of her songs was called Sailor. It was a German song originally. It was one of Mary R.'s favorite, and he always especially liked the line which said, Sailor, stop your wandering. So, as always, we have come far too quickly to the end of our time together. And that means that from the captain's chair, your captain is, it is my wish, my hope, and my command that you take care of those people for whom you are responsible. I can assure you that Professor Reinhardt, Dr. Reinhardt, Mark, is doing just that with his lovely family here. And it has been one of the great joys and pleasures and enjoyment and privileges of both Mary Arts and my life to have them as friends in our lives. And so we have, in the time that we have had together, we have reconstructed some of the memories of Mary R's and my time here with them and our time together in the States. So not only must you take care of the people for whom you are responsible, you must watch their six, but you must also take care of yourself. Because if you don't take care of yourself, then you're not going to be able to take care of those for whom you're responsible. So we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again next week. I will be back in the captain's chair up on the magical isle of Vashon. And not only do we never say goodbye, we say until we meet again there. But wherever I'm in the world, I will be always broadcasting to Captain Joe's people live, unscripted and unrehearsed. And this is your Captain Joe, as always, up in the captain's chair, on station, and watching properly.